Good afternoon, South Carolina. How are we doing today? It is, it's just an absolutely beautiful day outside. I had the chance to spend some time in the woods this morning. My Clemson Tigers are kicking off here in just a few minutes, and I get to spend the afternoon with you in Roger's absence. So this is Ben Lancaster. Glad to be with you today, hosting Woods and Water, South Carolina. Roger's out playing hooky today. He's down on the Midlands today. Actually, I'm in Columbia. Roger's down that direction. He's hosting a pig picking for Anthony Gagliardi, the 2014 FLW champion on Lake Murray. Casey Ashley, who won the 2015 Bass Masters Classic on Lake Hartwell. And Patrick Walters and Geddes Brennan, the USC FLW collegiate champions. And they won that on Lake Murray as well. So all South Carolina anglers winning on their home lake. So that is pretty cool. So Roger's down there serving as host, which he is very good at, and eating barbecue, which he is good at. So I hope you guys are having fun and enjoying your afternoon. Let's go kind of through some calendar of events, some fun things that are going on in the area, some things that you and your family may want to go out and take advantage of. Some of these are free, which is really nice. So really the only obstacle is getting there. The South Carolina Department of Natural Resources is hosting a youth deer clinic in Marion County on November 25th. And most of these events are coming up here pretty quick. So if you're going to take advantage of them, you probably need to make the phone call or get the plans in place. But this is going to be a youth deer clinic. It's going to go on from 8:30 a.m. until 1:30 p.m. Again, it's a free clinic. The youth ages are 10 to 17. We're going to go through the basics of deer hunting, which is always important when you're getting those youngsters in the woods. Going to go through some things like cooking, game care and prep, tree stand safety, which is always important, marksmanship, and how to stay legal while hunting. So probably something that every hunter should take part of, certainly young hunters that are just getting into the sport. If you're interested, contact Steve Simpson at simpsons@dnr.sc.gov. So the first 25 students that apply will be accepted, so go ahead and make contact today. This is an event that I know Roger would love. Roger's loves airplanes and aviation. This is the Youth Aviation Day. It's going to be hosted in Woodruff, South Carolina, in partnership with Triple Tree Aerodrome and USCYAA. It's going to be on November 21st from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you're interested in this, and again, this is a free event, so if you have a child that's interested in aviation or airplanes, I've got a little boy who thinks every airplane that flies over is Dusty Crop Popper. So if you're interested in aviation, get them out there. You need to contact Adam, and that number is 864-908-4036. Tis the season for oysters, right? So the Sumter County Museum is hosting the Carolina Backcountry Oyster Roast on Thursday, November 19th from 6 to 9 p.m. This is like right up my alley. So all you can eat oysters, barbecue, chili, collards, beer, wine, soft drinks. So it's going to be a ton of fun. The tickets are $50 for non-members, and tickets at the door are $55. So go ahead and reserve your tickets now if you thinking you may want to go. The phone number there, and it's Sumter County Museum, the phone number is 803-775-0908. Take advantage of that. This is a group that I've actually had the kind of joy of speaking with and learning more about. It's Riley's Catch. They are doing an event on November 20th through the 22nd in partnership with YMCA Camp Thunderbird. They host a fishing tournament, the Riley's Cup, world-class fishing experience. But it's all about making impact in the life of young kids. So they're going to feature high-energy outdoor adventures for the purpose of developing strong hearts and minds that build impact for the future. They're going to be doing team-building adventures, new friendships, creativity, critical thinking, collaboration, communication skills, and they'll be mentored by outdoor professionals. So that'll be a great event, and it's a fantastic organization. Again, it's Riley's Catch, R-I-L-E-Y-S, Catch, rileyscatch.com. Just take a minute to look at that organization and see what they're all about. Cost is $175 per person. It will be a lot of fun for sure. If you're in the Charleston area, there's a few things going on. Again, this one is free. Maverick Boat Company pro staffers are going to be talking tips and tricks on Charleston fall fishing. So you may want to get down there. It's going to be at the Palmetto Boat Sales, which is off Savannah Highway. You'll need to RSVP to Robbie Renrick, which you can email him at robbyrenrick@gmail.com. But they'll be talking all things Charleston and all things fishing. So you want to be able to take advantage of that. The Beta Club, I was never smart enough to be in Beta Club, but the Beta Club for Fort Dorchester High School, which is in North Charleston, they're going to do a Butts and Wings Barbecue Fest. That's going to be November 20th and 21st. So lots of stuff going on right here before Thanksgiving. They're going to have live music Friday and Saturday night. Palmetto Storm Band is going to play Friday, and South Rail Bluegrass Band will play Saturday night. Tickets are $15 each. That'll be a fun event for the entire family, so make sure to go there. Kind of the last thing on the calendar today is through Coastal Expeditions, Charleston's original outfitter. They're doing a full moon kayak tour. If you kind of want to get away for you and your family, you know, kids are welcome to come, or just you and your wife, or whatever you're thinking you might want to do, this could be a good way to just kind of relax and get away from the stress of the world. Give them a call at 843-884-7684 or info@coastalexpeditions.com. That'll be a great way to spend the day. That's November 25th. The price is $58 for adults and $38 for children 12 and under. So we have a really, well, I think we have a fantastic show lined up. I've got a good friend of mine, Brandon Bailey, who's a retired Marine gunnery sergeant, who's going to join us here after the commercial break. We have Dr. Grant Woods, who is, in my opinion, the leading authority on deer and deer hunting in the country currently. He's going to be on the show. And we're just going to kind of chat a bit about some things that are going on. But this week, we observed Veterans Day, which we're so grateful for the men and women who serve our country, who keep us safe, who do that selflessly. And I just thought it is deserving enough that we kind of go back and maybe look at a little bit of history on what Veterans Day is all about. So this was a lesson for me because I am certainly not a history buff, and I just enjoyed going back and reading through some of this and learning about why we celebrate the days that we celebrate. So a little bit of a history of Veterans Day. World War One, which was known at the time as the Great War, it officially ended with the when the Treaty of Versailles was signed on June 28th, 1919, in the Palace of Versailles outside the town of Versailles, France. However, the fighting ceased 7 months earlier when an armistice, or temporary cessation of hostiles, between the Allied nations and Germany went into effect on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. And so for that reason, November 11th, 1918 is generally regarded as the end of the war to end all wars. In November 1919, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed November 11th as the first commemoration of Armistice Day with the following words: "To us in America, the reflections of Armistice Day will be filled with solemn pride and the heroism of those who died in the country's service, and with gratitude for the victory, both because of the thing from which it had freed us and because of the opportunity it has given America to show her sympathy with peace and justice in the Council of the Nations." An act was approved May 13th in 1938, made the 11th of November in each year legal holiday, a day dedicated to the cause of world peace, which we could use some right now, and to be thereafter celebrated and known as Armistice Day. Armistice Day was primarily a day set aside to honor veterans of World War One, but in 1954, after World War II had required the greatest mobilization of soldiers, sailors, Marines, which we'll have one on the show here with us in just a few minutes, and airmen in the nation's history, American forces fought aggression in Korea. The 83rd Congress, at the urging of the Veterans Service Organization, amended the Act of 1938 by striking out the word armistice and inserting in its place the word veterans. With the approval of the legislation on June 1st, 1954, November 11th became a day to honor American veterans of all wars. And so this week we were able to do that, and I hope you took the opportunity to thank a veteran. We'll have the opportunity to hear from one right after the break. Stick with us.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I hope everyone's having a great day. I've got one of my, I'll go ahead and say it, one of my best buddies and one of my heroes on the phone. Brandon, are you with us?
I'm with you. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well, my friend. What you up to today?
We're out here in Clinton, South Carolina. Yeah, the Purple Hearts and Heroes Foundation has teamed up with the Lexington County, South Carolina SWAT team. And we have, for our second time now, we're hosting four veterans up. Well, they're active duty service members, actually. We've hosted them up here at Clinton, South Carolina, for a deer hunt.
That's awesome. Brent, I'm going to give a little back history on our friendship and kind of how it's evolved. I've hosted this show, and I've been part of this show for almost a year now. And through that, I've mentioned that I work with Outdoor Underwriters. And in doing that, I travel across the country doing expos and business meetings. And at one of those meetings, which was the Cincinnati Hunting and Fishing Exposition in Cincinnati, Ohio, Brandon had a booth there for Purple Hearts and Heroes Foundation. Well, the show was slow one afternoon, and I was walking around just shaking hands with the other exhibitors, just trying to figure out who's near me and what do they do and what do they have to offer and, you know, what services do they provide. And so I walked over to Brandon, and I think our conversation lasted about 30 minutes, because once you talk to Brandon, once you hear his story, once you hear about what he's been through, what he's come through, and what he's doing now, you can't help but be attracted to the story and want to get involved and learn more. So I asked a lot of questions. I probably asked a lot of dumb questions or naive questions about, you know, military life and the things that surround it. But as I mentioned earlier, Brandon is a retired Marine gunnery sergeant, highly decorated, Purple Heart recipient. And Brandon, would you share with us a little bit about your story to catch people up on why it is that you founded Purple Hearts and Heroes Foundation?
Absolutely, Ben. You know, I had spent a long time in the Marine Corps, and I had the greatest job in the world doing so. And I was involved in an IED blast in early 2004, and it had taken me out of the fight, essentially. I had got accustomed to the deployments and the workups to the deployments, and it was something that I actually loved. It was something where I felt I was making a difference. And that was all taken away from me. That night in 2009, threw the IED, ended up getting crushed by a truck, and had some critical injuries that they told me I'd never walk again. And it was a long road back to recovery. So once I did get to where I learned to walk and I was getting back adjusted to just being able to function day to day by myself, I was unable to continue on with my service. So I ended up having to medically retire. And when I retired, I kind of lost a purpose. I'd lost, you know, my brothers in arms that I was with every day, that, you know, it was just day in and day out. Those are the same guys that I was with. I was missing that, and with the camaraderie and the fellowship. And I received a call from a gentleman named Tom Dermody out of Colusa, California. And he said, you know, Brandon, someone told me that you had retired and you were kind of going through a rough spot adjusting from military life to civilian life. And he told him that I was a hunter, so he offered me to come out to one of his hunts. He said, just come out and get around these guys and, you know, see how it goes. So I did. I went on that hunt, and it's like someone flipped a switch, because I got around other service members and got talking about what was going on and found out that I was not the only one in this situation, not the only one going through these, you know, these difficult times. So I continued to go back with Field of Dreams to help that foundation with these hunts. And from that, the friendship I had built with Tom Dermody and his foundation, I came up with the idea of starting essentially the same thing in Kentucky as they had in California. So with their assistance, about 2 years ago, we went ahead with the help of Field of Dreams. My mother was a big help in that. we got and we started the Purple Hearts and Heroes Foundation. And what we do is we take deserving veterans, special needs children, and children of the fallen, if they've lost a mother or father in war, we take them on outdoor adventures, mainly hunting trips, fishing trips, just to get these people away from the rigors of life that they're going through, to go ahead and get them outdoors and away from everything, to forget about it for a while. Because, you know, and I will never take anything away, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but there's something the woods and the water do for someone that no shrink could ever give that therapy to.
Sure.
And it has, you know, we have four service members up here today. Some are good friends of mine that I've actually served with on the battlefield. Some I have never met. And it's just giving them that break. And I go back to deserving veterans or deserving service members, vice wounded service members. For instance, I have a gentleman up here, Marine, who actually was the one who saved my life. He has 8 combat deployments, and I've seen a lot of different things that he's done in a combat zone. He's not a Purple Heart recipient, but no one can tell me that I'm any more deserving than he is, and that's just how I look at it. But you got this Marine who's done a lot of great things, and I'm doing my best to give him, you know, one weekend, that break away from everything that's going on, and put him in the field, and hopefully just get him on a deer. But I always say that the hunt's not always about the kill. It's about the friendships, the bonds, the fellowship of getting out in the woods with your brothers and sisters and making a good time of it and just relaxing for a little bit.
There's one thing that I've learned about you, Brandon, through this past year of getting to spend time with you, and you are one of the most selfless people I've ever met. And that reflects in your foundation as well. You know, Brandon is always invited at these hunts to hunt. They always say, Brandon, please come down and invite you guys, and you sit in the stand too. Brandon, you rarely do that, if ever, correct?
On the hunts that I've hosted, I won't hunt. I'm here for those. I'm here for those other individuals, and just getting them out there and being able to see them have a good time, and that helps me more than anyone around me can really understand. And I tell those guys when they get there, and we've had kids, we've had males, we've had females, and I tell them when they get there, this is your hunt. This is not my hunt. This is not my mom's hunt as much as she would love it to be her hunt. Mm-hmm. This is not her hunt.
Right.
But it's your hunt. So whatever you want, let us know and we'll do. But I'm there for them. And I also tell them, you're here and you're having a great time, but you have no idea what this does for me as a person. So, yeah, I these events are for them, giving back to them.
Yeah, when we did the turkey hunt, and I say we, I was just there. When you did the turkey hunt last year, and I got to speak to the Marines that were there, I spoke to the gentleman who saved your life. It was amazing because Brandon was attempting to tell the story about his experience. And again, Brandon being selfless didn't really want to take the limelight or kind of go through all that. And it was comical in a way, only because the gentleman that saved your life made it that way. Brandon was attempting to give the story, and it was so emotional, and everybody was crying, that this gentleman got up and said, Brandon, let me save you again, and followed through on the story. And we were all crying like babies, and, you know, it was an unbelievable experience to be part of. Every time I hear your story, it's like I've heard it for the first time, because it's that inspiring, and it's that tragic at the same time. But I know that the guys that are participating with you this weekend are so grateful that you took yourself from where you were, and you admitted to me that it was a really tough time for you for quite a while, and you were able to partner with Field of Dreams, and that was inspirational for you, and you're carrying that forward.
Well, absolutely. And, down here, this was just a fluke how I got linked with the Lexington County SWAT team. I have a board member, James Sullivan, who works in Lexington County.
Oh, Sully.
Yep, and he made that connection. And the these guys on the SWAT team have just, they have worked diligently to make this happen down here. They get so involved in this, and they have done so much. I can't thank them enough. But they have done so much. And tonight, and I know I'll see you here in a few hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be there.
They're hosting a big cookout, a big dinner tonight at the farm where we're at. And there's going to be different supporters of the foundation that are going to be there. There's a lot of people that are going to be there tonight that want to learn about this program and see what we're doing. And that's what I tell people. Hey, you want to know about it, go to the website. That's great. But if you really want to know about it, you come down and you see what's going on with these guys and gals that come out on these hunts. It does, and you were there last year for it. It just mm-hmm. It changed your life. And it's not what goes on in the field. It's once you come out of that field and, sure. and the stories that are told and just everything, the friendship and the camaraderie, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, the most memorable quote for me from the turkey hunt, I think we're just talking in a circle, and I don't know that you were standing right beside me for this, Brandon, but there were three Marines that were there, and, you know, I just sort of stood in awe of them because every day they put their life on the line. That is what they do, and they choose to do it. And I just I kept thanking them, and I'm like, you know, you guys, I just really appreciate it. You guys make it so that we're safe, and without hesitation, one of the guys stepped up, and without cracking a smile, he just said, "Somebody has to kill the bad guys." And I went, yeah. And I'm glad it's you guys that are doing it, because, you know, you felt so secure being around them. And, that statement, when he just made it, it just said, you know what? We're in safe hands. We've got great people protecting us in this country. And it was just so great to be around them.
It's, I know what you mean. And it's, a lot of people don't understand it. You'll see a veteran in the airport or at the store or whatever. You'll see somebody with a hat or a shirt, and you thank you for your service, and that's great. I don't want anyone to ever think that that's unappreciative. But when you get to these events and you spend a little time with these guys and gals and you hear some of the stories, and that's the sense of humor that a lot of them have. Mm-hmm. You can't replace that. You can't replace it.
Brandon, a few quick questions. We got about 2 minutes left before the break. I want to make sure we get to this. One, you answered it in a way, but our country, not to get political, but our country, we're facing some interesting times right now with the issues in Paris, France that we just saw yesterday unfold, which I'm sure you're fully aware of.
Absolutely.
We've got a mess in front of us. From your perspective, I'd just be interested to know, hey, what do you think's going on and how do we deal with it? And the last two things to finish it up, make sure people know how they can support you and how they can get in touch with you if they want to support Purple Hearts and Heroes. We've got about a minute left, Brandon. It's all yours.
We'll do. This mess, like you said, we're in a mess right now, but I have a feeling we're going to come out of it, because I think the United States as a whole is getting fed up with what we have right now. If we keep doing what we've been doing, we're going to keep getting what we've got right now, sure. in a sense. So I think we'll come out of that. It's going to take a little bit to get things straightened out, but I hope we're in the right direction.
How do we get in touch with you, Brandon? How can people connect with you?
Get in touch with me. You go to purpleheartsandheroes.org is our website. Go to the website, find out about the program. Telephone numbers are
Perfect.
On there. Emails are on there. That's how we can get in touch.
Thank you, pal. Hey, I'm going to see you tonight. I'm looking forward to it. Have a good night.
Yes, sir. Have a good one, Ben.
Thank you, Brandon.
Well, he's been on the show before. He's an old friend, not age-wise, but just time-wise. And he's joining us again because it's deer season, and who better to talk to about whitetail deer than Dr. Grant Woods. Grant, welcome to Woods and Water.
Roger, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. It is deer season. How are things at the proving grounds? Are y'all having a good one so far?
Man, we are. This year has been odd in that we had several cold fronts passed, usually on weekends during October, and you know, a lot of people talk about the October lull, but that's really not true. It's okay. Easy to explain. Deer have gotten long hair. They shed their hair twice each year, and so in September they usually molt and put on really long hair, and it's still hot in October, so they simply don't move much except at night. It'd be like us trying to go mow the yard with a big down coat on. We're going to wait till it's as cool as we can. So those cold fronts have had deer on their feet, and my oldest daughter, Raleigh, 17, took a nice mature four-year-old buck with her bow. My youngest daughter, Ray, took a mature buck with her gun, and even old blind dad stumbled into a mature buck. So we've had a great season so far.
That's good. I was going to ask you if dad had had a chance to get something on the ground.
Yeah, you know, it was, man, it was a really exciting hunt. It was, again, one of those cold fronts, and it was a morning, you know, the cold front kind of come through the night, so we scurried out there in the morning. I won't share all the details, but some young bucks come by chasing some does and pushing them around and grunting, and I could see them in a distance, so I grunted just to see how they'd respond, and a big old buck on our hit list just come busting in. I mean, he come from behind us, and I thought, well, here comes another yearling buck. I don't know why I was thinking that, but that's what I was thinking. And when I saw his antler bases, I knew I was wrong in my assumption. I scurried to get my bow, and it worked out.
Very, very good. And, you know, it's always good when the kids can get out there, though. It is always good. I was at a Department of Natural Resources youth deer clinic a couple weeks ago, and seeing those kids climbing those tree stands and shooting those guns, and you look at them and you think, how much fun are they going to have over the next 20, 25 years? It's just the endless opportunities for them.
Not only that, but how much more of a responsible citizen they will be. They learn gun safety and rights and privileges and the need to behave appropriately. It's just a great teaching tool.
It is. Well, you kind of blew one of my myths out of the water with the response to one of the emails I sent you, and that there is no first and second rut. There's just one rut with peaks and valleys. So while we're towards the end of the rut here in South Carolina, tell us a little more about what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So we all probably learned in school or saw in our work or something along the way, something called a bell-shaped curve. And it's just, you know, it's whatever action you're talking about. It starts off slow and it goes up to a higher peak and then tapers off.
Right.
And what happens in the whitetail rut, no matter where you are, the shape of the curve may be different, but it's always that bell-shaped curve. So the tighter the adult sex ratio, the steeper and narrower that curve will be.
Okay.
And the more spread out, or the more does per buck, tend to be the longer curve. So, you know, in coastal South Carolina, I've done a lot of work down there, literally, and I mean it's literally, pulled hundreds or thousands of fetuses out of does down there and measured them and backdated the breeding date and forward dated to parturition or birth date. So I know that deer herd extremely well.
Okay.
And we run a property, it's a big aluminum refinery just outside Mount Holly, South Carolina. It was, at the time, they sold off some land, but at the time it was 6,000 acres, and we had the horrible job of having to harvest about 100 deer a year for pollution to see if these deer were picking up any pollution coming out of smokestacks.
Sure.
So it was a horrible job. I just hated every minute of it because we did it using standard hunting techniques.
Okay.
So we could use the data to relate to other hunters. Even though we had permits and we could do stuff other ways,
we
did it just like anyone else in low country would do. In fact, even more stringent, I made all of my quote-unquote workers, hunters, wear orange, even though you didn't have to on private land in South Carolina,
right,
so the data would be comparable to other states and what we were seeing per hour and stuff like that.
Okay.
And when we started, the place hadn't been hunted in quite a while, and there was all kind of does and not many bucks. Poachers had taken a lot of bucks and whatnot. And we had a rule of shooting 5 does for every buck. You could not shoot a buck unless you killed 5 does.
Okay.
We held that rule for 11 years.
My goodness.
We ended up with about a 3.14 adult buck-to-doe sex ratio. So we started with more does than bucks.
Right.
We ended up with a lot more bucks than does, by design.
Okay.
We watched that rut get about a month earlier because we dramatically changed the adult sex ratio, even earlier than neighboring properties.
I was just about to say, if managing that buck-to-doe ratio, you could have a rut on one piece of property totally different than the rut on the property beside it.
Yeah, especially on a 6,000-acre property.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking 40 acres, no, you're not going to do that.
Right.
You're all sharing deer. But on this property is large enough, we actually had deer that live and died on the property anyway. But through all that, of course, we're tracking all the fetuses and conception dates and birth dates,
right,
and a lot of great data going on. And every year, even though the mean or the average breeding date shifted a little earlier over 11 years, you know, a little bit at a time, it's still a bell-shaped curve. And what we saw, it go from a really long spread-out curve. You know, it started slowly.
Right.
A few does started getting bred. It went up to a peak at that property in mid-October, coastal plain deer.
Okay.
And then slowly, slowly, slowly back down. And that right leg of the curve, or the right side of the curve, is almost always a slower descent or spread out longer because, you know, if a doe's not bred, she'll usually cycle again in about 28 days.
Right.
And then if you have a healthy deer herd, which we got to towards the end there the last few years, if a fawn in the coastal plain, female fawn, reaches 60, 65 pounds, about 70 pounds here in the Midwest, sure reach puberty and become receptive. So you've got doe fawns reaching puberty down there in December, January, and the bucks are still going to breed her. So that's what I think people think is the first stage or second stage of the rut. It's really just peaks and valleys in this long bell-shaped curve.
Absolutely. And that's why I like to have you on. There is no greater authority on this than you, and I really appreciate you lending that to the radio show.
Yeah, or just no one wanted to gut as many deer as I did and learn all this stuff from the other. Not sure. But.
Well, I'm sure it's been a tough job, but somebody has to do it.
It was a brutal job. Brutal job. Missed those days. I don't miss that August 15th opening day because mosquitoes were horrible.
Boy, I tell you, this year, and you can talk to people from across the state who've hunted anywhere. I haven't really hunted that much because I've been too busy. But everybody I talk to, and I've been in the coast a couple of times, I even had a plantation hunt down on the Ashapoo River. And those mosquitoes, they have got to be getting bigger. And in fact, there was a cartoon going around here with a yellow, you know, caution sign, a mosquito carrying a hunter off and says, meanwhile, back in South Carolina. That's the way it's been, especially with so much rain. We've had a ton of rain here this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and the mosquitoes have just been brutal. Brutal, brutal.
It doesn't make hunting any fun.
No, it doesn't. But you go out and do it. But, okay, hunting's not fun. You know, you always, all the hunters get built up and gung-ho for opening of, you know, archery or muzzleloading and gun. And then you go through, I guess what we're talking about is we're really going through the first big tick up in that rut. And then you hit the backside of that bell curve you were talking about, and everybody thinks the deer have vanished.
Yep.
What happens? They're still there. We all know they're still there. What are some of the factors that make those deer either on their end vanish or on the hunter's side? You know, we get complacent or don't like the time change getting up earlier. What are some of the things that lend to that lull that we talk about when we think the deer are no longer around?
Yeah, I think that's primarily just deer adapting to hunter behavior.
Okay.
So you may recall we visited that the number one motivation for deer is fear.
Right.
Not food or the rut, but fear. They want to live. They want to survive. And, you know, that's human behavior, too, if you get right down to it. We all live pretty cushy here in America, actually. But, you know, he dropped us off in the middle of Afghanistan. We wouldn't worry about what color shoes we had on. We'd worry about a bullet hitting us.
That's exactly right.
So deer, you know, they live in an intense environment. In South Carolina, coyote population is very high. Hunting season's extremely long. Bag limits are very liberal. I got to tell you, my hat goes off to guys and gals in South Carolina that can tag a three-year-old buck year after year. You're one of the best hunters in America. That deer may only score 120 inches,
right?
But you're probably hunting harder than a guy killing a 200-inch deer in Kansas, literally.
Yeah.
Literally. Because that hunting pressure is so intense, and those deer are so alert. And then, you know, a lot now with the expanded baiting rules, people think baiting makes hunting easier. That's just the opposite than true. It makes it tougher because deer learn to associate bait piles with humans trying to kill them.
That's right.
And so they become very nocturnal.
Right.
And this data is clear. A lot of people want to argue it, but this has been studied state after state, like in South Carolina, where there's been baiting in one portion and no bait in another. Then they open up baiting, success rates actually go down. Right. They go up the first year because the deer go, oh, man, here's a corn pile.
Right.
Because they're not used to corn piles except the illegal ones,
right.
And they're not used to any pressure over the corn pile. But once they associate that corn pile with a really loud thunderbolt and, you know, mama's white belly laying on the ground, they go, ooh.
Right.
Mama went over to that corn pile and it thundered real loud and she didn't walk away. I don't think I'd go there anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that data is really clear.
Okay.
So with the addition of more baiting and just a tremendous history of huge hunting pressure in South Carolina. Gosh, after the first few weeks of hunting season, those deer, they've caught on to the game. You know, if you're blessed enough to be the only hunter on a 15,000-acre plantation, you're going, that guy's crazy. Well, I don't see any pressure like that.
Sure.
But if you're the average guy like me, my wife, Tracy, and I, we lived down by Abbeville, South Carolina when we lived there.
Right.
We had 13 acres.
Yeah.
Yep. I put a lot of pressure on 13 acres.
Yeah.
You know, it got over 100 pretty quickly. And
true.
I had to really, really, really fake them out to, you know, watch the wind and do everything I could to see deer on that 13 acres.
You know,
it's amazing how many stands you can put up on 13 acres.
Back to back, I'm sure.
Well, I just told my wife, there's no need to getting on the ground when you can walk tree to tree out there.
That's right. That's exactly right. You brought up and my thought just left me. You brought up a good point, and in fact, it was something that you put up on Growing Deer TV's Facebook page, sanctuaries.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about sanctuaries.
Yeah, sanctuaries can make a medium-sized property hunt like a large property. So, you know, on 13 acres, it's pretty tough to have a sanctuary.
Sure.
It's not like you can say, you know, I'm not going to hunt a yard, but I'm going to hunt the rest of the property. That didn't work too well.
Right.
And by the way, I did hunt a yard, but anyway.
If that's where the deer are, that's where you have to go.
That's what you got to do, mama. Yeah.
That's right.
So on my land, like where Trace and I live now, we set aside some areas that we absolutely don't go in. My wife's a big shed hunter. She goes in there shed hunting in the off season, or we recover a deer if it runs in there. But other than that, we just don't go in there. And, you know, if you own 80 acres, and everyone says, well, I can't give up any land on 80 acres. But if you take 20 acres and set it aside and just don't go in there, just play by the rules, don't go in there, deer will become comfortable and they're hanging out more on your 80 acres than if you're going all over the place all the time. And I say 20 acres, there's no magic here, but it needs to be big enough that when you walk on the upwind side, your scent's not just going through the whole sanctuary.
Gotcha.
Because remember, it's not just where we are,
right,
but it's where deer detect us or sense us. So it's in our scent cone or downwind of us. And I have seen sanctuaries take, you know, 80-acre properties, 100-acre properties, and make them hunt like 500-acre properties.
Gives me
hope. And I will put food plots right in sanctuaries. And people go, why would you ever plant a food plot without having a tree stand over it? Because I want a deer being so comfortable eating there that their guard is down, that when they step out of sanctuary, their guard is still down.
Okay.
And they're not going to live and die in 20 acres.
No, they're not.
So go ahead and put a food plot in there and never hunt it or save it for youth season or late season, you know, hunt it once a year or whatever. But sanctuaries are just an area where deer are never alerted. It's, you know, maybe coyotes, whatever, but they're not alerted to human pressure on your property, hopefully in the center of your property or central to your property, and you hunt them on the way in and out. Because where do deer spend most of their daylight hours? In cover.
Bedded down.
Yeah, bedded down. So everyone says, I want food plots, I want to hunt food, and I'm a huge food plot fan. But if I had a choice on a smaller property between managing for food or cover, I would absolutely manage for cover, because that's where they're going to be during daylight most likely, and I hunt during daylight.
Right.
So I want the deer on my land during legal hunting hours. And cover's the key to that.
Cover's the key. And it gives me hope, because we've got 80 acres that we just had a bunch of timber cut off of, and my brother and I are trying to figure out, okay, you know, what are we going to leave? What are we just going to let grow up to nothing? We had some thinning done, left some scattered oaks around. And it's when I saw that, I was like, you know, we need to make that happen. And so visually in my mind, I'm trying to figure out where we can put 10, 15, 20 acres that we just leave alone. And I've already told them we do not shoot deer in food plots.
You know, some people don't do that, some do. I'm okay either way on that.
Okay.
I would limit it. Don't just only hunt over food plots. Because you think about this, you know, you drive to the south, anywhere in the south, and from the highway, you can see up and down power lines or food plots, whatever. There's always a box stand or a ladder stand or something you can see if you're watching. And it reminds me of a guard tower at a prison. There's a guy in there, a gal in there with the gun, just daring to, here, I'm going to feed you, I'm going to plant this food plot for you, and then when you step out, I'm going to kill you. Yeah, and there's just no relief, and there's a trail worn a foot deep through the clay or the sand, depending on where you are, to get to that box stand, because the guy planted a food plot there.
Yeah.
And the trail to the box stand is bigger than all the deer trails going to it, and if that's the case, you know you're doing it wrong. If the human approach trail is more worn than the deer trails, The deer have patterned you.
Yep, they have. And they'll do it in a hurry, as we just talked about last time.
Deer learn quick, yep. And they have memory. So, you know, that's like they'll say, well, I'm going to scout today because it's going to rain tonight, and that way deer won't know I'm there. Well, the rain doesn't flush out a deer's memory. If it smells you before it rains, it's not like the rain said, oh, well, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, you need to scout, especially in season like you're hunting, where you're not, where you're watching your scent and you're not alerting deer. And I like to scout on drier days because moist, wet days hold scent more and it stays longer. And in South Carolina, where that deer season is so long and hunting is so popular, and I'm thankful it is,
yes,
those deer get very smart. Again, if you can successfully tag a 3-year-old buck year in South Carolina, if you come to the Midwest, this is like the big secret. If you come to the Midwest, you look like a rock star deer hunter. Because these deer out here, you know, like Missouri's gun season is 9 days long.
Right.
If they survive 9 days, they pretty much got it whipped. Now, our bow season's 4-month long, but it's a lot. You know, the majority of the deer, some years up to 90% of the deer, Missouri's a huge state. Like,
sure.
You could drop several South Carolinas in Missouri.
Yes, yes.
90% of the deer killed in Missouri are on opening day of gun season.
Wow.
You know, there's just, like in South Carolina, if it's raining opening day, a lot of guys roll over and go back to bed because, you know, you've got months to hunt.
That's right. That's right.
If the Russian army is coming through Missouri on opening day, we may shoot a few Russians, but we're deer hunting while we're out there because it's deer season. It only happens for 9 days, and we're not going to miss it.
Right.
And, and every deer in the whole state, unless it's living downtown St. Louis, goes, ooh, it's deer season. I'm going to cover, buddy. There's coffee and chewing tobacco and bologna sandwiches in every nook and cranny across the state.
Sure.
In South Carolina, it is so long, and there's so much hunting pressure. So, you know, I work hard to tag a mature buck before gun season. In Missouri, we're loud. Our season's much different. I like how the cultures across America are so different.
Sure.
So in Missouri, archers get a buck tag, before gun season, and then they can have a tag after, or they could take 2 bucks after gun season with a bow. Bow season starts September 15th, goes through January 15th, with a 9-day break in the middle in November for gun season. And this is really interesting, how much seasons and politics affect deer herd quality.
Oh, yes.
It's amazing.
Oh,
so
yes.
And just y'all listening out there, just Google the Boone and Crockett map.
Right.
And look at Kansas. Think about the states that border Missouri.
Right.
Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, to our west and north, okay, kind of make a loop around Missouri.
Okay.
And within a few miles of the Missouri line, all the way around that U I just described, just a few miles, so it's not a difference of rain or soil, there's a whole lot more Boone and Crockett's on the non-Missouri side than the Missouri side. Well, let's think about what's going on. All those states I just mentioned, except Nebraska, have a limited draw for non-residents.
Right.
A non-resident tag in Kansas is approximately $450. In Missouri, and you got to draw for it. It's a lottery.
Right.
In Missouri, everybody can go to Stuff Mart, buy a tag for roughly $250. So all those Kansas, Iowinians, South Carolinians, whoever, come to Missouri, go to Stuff Mart, buy a tag. There's no limits, and it's not very expensive. And our gun season is smack dab in the rut.
Okay.
Smack dab in the rut. In Kansas, gun season doesn't open until December when the rut's kind of calming down. Iowa shotgun season late in the season. Illinois split shotgun season late in the season. So if we're wanting to encourage people to improve deer habitat, let's move to peak gun season out of the rut, because in late season, if you have food, you own deer.
Right.
If you've got food deer on your property, that will encourage more people to make food plots, which benefits bunny rabbits and sown birds and all types of critters, not just deer.
Correct.
So it's pretty easy. Unfortunately, I'm a biologist, not a politician, and I've got no say-so in Missouri. I've got no pool here, but it's the biology part of it's really easy. And in South Carolina, I love the long liberal season. I preferred to bow hunt. All my buddies were gun hunting. That's fine. I never had a problem with that.
Sure.
But it's up to each landowner to dictate how much hunting pressure is on their property.
True.
And I'm fine with that. So, you know, if you want to have 50 people on 50 acres to hunt every weekend, that's your choice.
Gotcha.
And if you want to kind of moderate the hunting pressure and say, boys, we're going to give them a week off this week, let stuff calm down or whatever it is, you can do that.
Which is something a lot of these clubs probably have never even thought about.
No, no, because everyone says, man, I paid my, you know, X dollars being a lease. I want total access. I want to hunt every acre. No way around the sanctuary. And if we do have a sanctuary, I'm sneaking in there because I know Joe's sneaking in there, so I'm going to sneak in there.
Wow. We create more problems sometimes than we realize.
That's why I loved hunting up above Walhalla, up in the mountains, up on that Forest Service land.
Right.
You know, I'm a tall, skinny boy. I don't mind walking. And you can get off the trail not too far up above Walhalla, and as long as you don't meet a guy playing a banjo, you're okay, because you're not going to meet anyone else up there.
That's right.
There's just thousands of acres with minimal hunting pressure.
Right.
And there's no food, but bucks get owed, and any buck that gets owed can grow big antlers.
Right.
You know,
right.
In northern Canada, there's not much food. And before the hunting pressure got too high and the aid structure got shot out, you know, Dick Idle and the other guys were killing a lot of Boone and Crockett's up there simply because they were killing 6- and 7-year-old bucks.
Right.
And the biology behind that is once a body of a deer gets bigger and their gut gets bigger, their gut actually becomes more efficient.
Okay.
And simply stated, can get more out of low-quality food. They can get more out of low-quality food. They don't have to be standing in a soybean field. But if you've got a 2-year-old deer, they need really high-quality diet to express their potential. And you get up there on the backside of some of those mountains above Walhalla, you know, they haven't seen a hunter in quite some time.
Right.
And haven't. There's some nice bucks up there. And it's a tough hunt. It's a rugged hunt, but I really enjoyed it.
Well, Grant, it's always good to have you on. I'd love to get you back on later on in the year, maybe first of the year, because we've got some, you know, proposed regulations and tags and all. I'd love to get your input on that in another show, if that'd be all right with you.
Yeah, I love it. Trace and I spent 14 years in South Carolina. It's home to us and still have a lot of friendships there, so I look forward to visiting with you again.
Well, I appreciate it. You take care, be careful in your travels, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks for the opportunity, Roger.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
We'll see.
Well, I think we probably all learned something there. I loved it when Grant said, if you can kill a 3.5-year-old buck in South Carolina, you're one of the best hunters in the country. That makes me feel good. I've looked up and done that a few times, and it just makes you feel good. Grant is he's the man. We've been very fortunate at Outdoor Underwriters, the company I work for, to actually be a sponsor of his show, GrowingDeer.tv. And so if you haven't ever watched his show before, go to GrowingDeer.tv. It's a web-based show, and you will learn all about deer. You'll learn all about critters. You'll learn all about how to do it. Most importantly, you'll learn how to do it right. And Grant is the authority there. So GrowingDeer.tv, and you will have – and the show is really enjoyable as well. So I think that was great that Grant took the time to do that and plans to do it again. We were talking about some calendar of events earlier. I wanted to let you guys know I have a little organization that I've been working on called C3 Outdoors. It's c3outdoors.org. We're going to host our hunt November 21st and 22nd at our family farm. We have 5 children that are coming from a Soldier's Child Foundation out of Tennessee that we're going to host and hunt. But that Saturday night, the 21st, we're going to do barbecue, bonfire, and music, and we'll have a good time. If you go to c3outdoors.org, you can message me if you have an interest in attending. I'd be more than happy to give you directions or let you know how to get there and more about what we're doing. Take a few minutes, if you will, go to Facebook, look at Woods and Water, South Carolina. If you'll post a image of you in the outdoors, you with a deer, you with a turkey, you with a kid on their first hunt, anything you in the outdoors related, we will pick a winner. We'll pick it this week. Roger will connect with you on Facebook, and we'll send you an NWTF branded knife. So just take time to upload an image. It could be today if you're in the woods or if you're about to go. Just snap a picture of you and that kid or you and the deer and throw it up on the Woods and Water South Carolina page. Roger will get in touch with you. We'll send you an NWTF knife. I've got something really important to tell you. There used to be a street named Chuck Norris, but it was changed because nobody crosses Chuck Norris and lives. That's the important message of the day. Just wanted to pass that along to you. The Roger's got a fantastic show planned for next week. It's his Thanksgiving show. You know, last year you guys got a feel for it. This year he's got some big things planned. So make sure you tune in next week for the Thanksgiving show. And always, as we say, make time to get out there, travel the back roads when you can, and don't forget the camera. If I'm up and gone to
my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone to Carolina.